Tiff, we are at our penultimate episode of The Office.
And next time will be the ultimate episode. Right? Is that how that works?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, gosh, I can't believe we're here.
I know, this is a big episode. Okay, so we'll just get right into it because it's so gigantic and intertwined and...
She said.
Is what she said. We are talking about the episode ARM, A-A-R-M, which is season 9, episode 22 and 23, according to the production codes, even though it aired together on May 9th, 2013.
Yeah, the format is very similar to last week. It was one long episode. Now on some streaming services, it's two. Where I watch it, it's two, complete with the last time on The Office. So,
so annoying.
Yeah, similar packaging as last time. And, yeah, so we're going to treat it as one, as we do. And I just love this steamy open. That's what I'm calling this. Because Dwight's in charge. Not only is he in charge of Dunder Mifflin Scranton, he's also the building owner, right? So he can do whatever he wants now. And he has increased security. He got doors from a jewelry store. I love the B-roll, by the way, of him at the jewelry store. Like, taking the doors down, like scraping like the diamond ring logo off of them. Like, the detail's nice. But yeah, things are hardcore because you get a secret code every morning and you have to use that to get in.
Every morning I email the day's security codes. Something that's been really missing from my life has been writing secret codes. It's not the KGB, but it's a start.
And Dwight's the one that messes up the code, and instead of breaking protocol, he has Aaron give him the steam.
Coffee in Paraguay is colder?
No, I meant you were getting colder. The correct response is the coffee in Peru is much hotter.
Much, okay.
But that's three wrong, so I gotta give you the steam.
No.
Unless you want me to break protocol.
No. No, give me the steam.
It's just harmless steam to panic intruders. I'd like to get harmful steam, but the prices are absurd.
It's just so expensive.
But Creed is saving a ton on dry cleaning.
That really made me laugh. He's just bringing a bunch of wrinkly clothes in.
Oh, I'm saving a fortune on dry cleaning.
It kind of reminded me, maybe you've done this. I know I have. Like if you travel and like you don't want to iron the shirt you have to wear that night or whatever. So you just hang it up in the bathroom when you take a shower. It's like,
absolutely.
The steam will fix it. I don't think that actually works, but it's working
for
Creed.
It never really fixes it. It never does, but I think it will.
Yeah, every time. Maybe this will be the first time. So yeah, it's a fantastic open. There's not a cold open to part two because there's not really a part two the way it aired. We jump right in. There's a lot of stuff in this episode. Where do we want to start?
The episode itself kind of starts by like laying out all the little threads. I think it like goes through all of them fairly quickly in the beginning. So we touch on that Angela is living with Oscar in Oscar's closet, which Oscar finds funny.
Yeah, a little ironic.
Ironic that now it's Angela who's living in the closet. Hey-o.
We have Dwight planning a proposal to Esther, so that just like gets dropped in our lap there.
Manager of Dunder Mifflin? Check. Owner of a 1,600-acre beet farm? Check. Engaged to be married to an actual milkmaid? Check. On that later today. This is my grandmother's ring. It was made from a bullet I took out of her left buttock. She was a moonshiner shot by Adolf Kors. This is my grandmother's buttock bullet ring.
And we have Andy kind of heading off to this audition for America's Next Fantastic Acapella Star or whatever it is. But that's right up Andy's alley. So he's heading off to that. So we're still keeping track of Andy, even though he gloriously quit.
Well, burned all my bridges at Dunder Mifflin and time to become the next American Idol by winning America's Next Acapella Sensation on Channel TBD. It's a really cool show. It's like a total reinvention of the whole American Idol voice sing-off phenomenon. On this show, all three judges are mean.
And we also have Jim still back at the office being Dwight's number two. Well, assistant to his number two? Assistant to Dwight.
Behind every great regional manager is a great assistant to the regional manager, and I have chosen one of the best.
Oh, thanks, man.
Once upon a time, we were natural enemies, but we've overcome our differences, much like Germany and Italy in World War... Good call. Together, we run a no-nonsense office.
We also have Pam having some mixed feelings now about Jim staying behind.
Mm-hmm.
When Jim decided to come back to Scranton full-time, I was relieved. But I also feel a little guilty. I mean, he's giving up this big thing for me. But he seems happy. I mean, he's certainly been goofing around a lot. I love goofy Jim.
And in addition to that, we later on see that Daryl is being a sneaky sneak and trying to leave without running into anybody and having to say goodbye.
Yeah, quiet quitting before it was cool.
I hate goodbyes. So last week, when I left Dunder Mifflin for good, I pulled the old Irish exit. Just slipped out without making a big deal. No hard feelings. No feelings at all.
My theory on this episode is that more time has passed between the previous episode and this one than normal. I don't think that's actually true because we've been building up to, hey, the documentary is getting ready to air, and this episode ends with the documentary airing. But it just feels like a lot has happened. It feels like maybe Andy's been gone for a while. Dwight had time to retrofit the entrance to the office. It feels like things are a bit subtle. And I really get that sense between Jim and Pam that maybe some time has passed. I don't think that's actually true, but it kind of feels that way to me.
Well, we can kind of reverse engineer this. So they saw the previews, right, for mm-hmm. the documentary, and it said airing this May? I don't know. We should look it up. But like it said airing soon, or it gave like a date or at least a month. And we knew that they were in a certain month then, so it's presumably that time now that it is airing.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe a little time has passed. But
yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong. I definitely think that you're right, but we could really look this up if we wanted to. Do we want to?
We could award one final Dundee if someone looks it up and sends it in before we record.
We're so lazy. We need an assistant to our assistant.
I know. Well, I have some challenges later. We can recycle.
Perfect. We'll do that.
Maybe let's start with Angela and Oscar and baby Philip. So they are living together, and Angela has to bring Philip into the office because the daycare that she was using won't take him anymore because of Angela's situation. Don't know what happened there, really. I think there's some deleted scenes that explain it a little bit better, but in the canon of the show, it's kind of left open-ended. And I like Oscar and Angela are kind of like a odd couple in this, right? Like they're, he's very helpful. Like at some point he like takes Philip to his mom's house for the evening, but then they like bicker about who forgot to pack his apple snacks. But Kevin is not taking it. Kevin's used to being the baby between Oscar and Angela, and now he has competition and Kevin feels like he's losing.
Why didn't you pack the apple snacks?
Why didn't you pack the apple snacks?
Guys.
Because whenever I pack the bag, you say I do it wrong.
Guys.
Why don't you pack it?
Guys.
Kevin, what? Is it?
Do you want to see a video of a weatherman who says bold front instead of cold front? It's insane. It's
not okay, now, Kevin. It's Can't okay. you see we're busy?
We're just Kevin.
Philip needs his apple snacks.
Seriously, Kevin. I'm just going to have to go to the store.
Okay, you go to the store.
Philip. It's all about Philip. I hate Philip.
Yeah, they become like this strange little put together family. Mm-hmm. And we saw that kind of thing was mentioned previously in like a very early episode. And so Oscar is definitely taking on a more parent heavy role now that Angela's living with him, with Philip. And yeah, we have some sibling rivalry going on in this episode. And I think it's really funny that Kevin reacts like this and we see him kind of mimicking the jealousy of an older sibling. But yeah, Philip being in the office has disrupted not only Kevin, but also Dwight. He is now kind of forced to see some of the apparent similarities between him and Philip. So he is back to suspecting that Philip might be a shrewd.
The way that boy looks at the Galactica is precisely the way I look at the Galactica. And he eats the same kind of paper I do.
Yes, he has a test for Philip called Schrute or Consequences. What a great name.
Philip, you want to play a little game? It's called Schrute or Consequences. You're going to choose one of these two things. A check for $1 million or this dirty old beat. Yuck. Pew.
Dwight holds him at one point and he quiets down. Now, we know Dwight is somewhat of a baby whisperer because of the party back at Gabe's house where he held baby Cece and was like, Jim had to beer him. This is very funny. Mama.
Hey, you want me to take the little diaper blaster? Pam can attest there's no one better at getting brats to shut their yaps.
He does have a gift.
Well, he's crying for his mom, but okay, here you go. Careful, he bites. Mama.
Dwight is suspicious, like you said. They like the same flavor of paper, tasty paper Phillips keeps trying to eat. He picks a beat over a check for $1 million. Like he has gorgeous, widely set eyes. Dwight is starting to put the pieces together. Even though in a previous episode, you know, there was some sort of test out of a diaper that said he wasn't his.
Well, we do know there were multiple babies in that episode, so it could have been the wrong Philip.
Maybe there's more going on here.
So now Dwight's suspicious about Philip's origins once again. And this kind of leads him to hesitate with Esther. We see at one point that she comes into the office to have a little picnic with him. And he's very distracted. He was going to propose today. He has his grandma's butt bullet ring ready to go. And he can't pull the trigger.
Was that a pun? Was that a butt bullet pun? I approve. Yeah, we see him put the kind of the ring back in his pocket, and he's kind of checked out when he's talking with Esther, and we see this sort of waffling on his part because he is kind of putting it together about Philip, but I think also a lot of it's also about Angela, and he realizes that, you know what, marrying Esther is not the move I should make. And he gets some advice at the end of the episode that really pushes that forward for him.
But before getting that advice, he tries very, very, like a very sterile proposal to Angela.
It's about Philip.
I'm sorry he's here today, but I had this.
I believe that boy may be a Schrute. And if he is, that child needs to be accorded what is his, an enormous farm, an inheritance, and the right to be raised under rigorous Schrute traditions. You will, of course, be compensated with a marriage proposal.
How thoughtful.
Then the two of you would move to my 1,600-acre estate, which, let's face it, is a big step up from living in a gay man's closet.
If he is your son, that's a great plan. But he's not. He's not your son.
Very well.
Can I go back to my desk now?
Yes.
It's so business, and Angela's having none of it. She rejects it. She tells Dwight that, no, Philip isn't yours, so this doesn't matter. And, I mean, I totally see where she's coming from, but, you know, this is a big change because originally, you know, Dwight professed how he feels about Angela to her. She said no. Then everything fell apart with the senator. I'm kind of doing a little recap here. And Angela confesses that she's in love with Dwight. Dwight says that the ball's in Angela's court now because he already put himself out there. And now we have Dwight kind of like offering Angela this really cold business deal. Even though we know Dwight has a lot of feelings behind it, he's still presenting it like this very benign, loveless gesture. Yeah. And I think he's doing that in order to like protect himself because Angela has rejected him, but he's still trying to find a way to like have her in his life. But it totally backfires. And that's when he seeks out Jim's advice. And I guess we'll get into that because, like we said, this episode is so intertwined. I mean, we started talking about Kevin and Philip, and now we're on to Dwight, you know, essentially moving on past Esther and going for Angela.
it's a capping of a years long thing, right? They've never really been on the same page about their future, right? I mean, the night that Andy proposes to her, they hook up in the office, right? Like, they've always just missed on the timing and the intention between each other. And so Dwight kind of making it like, okay, we'll put all that aside. And it's like, I think this is my child. You will be rewarded with a proposal. Like, maybe he thinks that's the only way forward. Like, if it's not going to be out of love, then it's going to be out of some sort of obligation to each other because of this child. And that doesn't work either. And it puts him in sort of this place where I don't think he really knows what to do with it. But at the same time, like, I like the way this unfolds because we get to see kind of the whole process, not only over all the years, but really kind of right here at the end where everything is kind of coming to a head.
So I think in order to finish this thread with Dwight, we need to start the thread with Jim and Pam.
Yeah.
And Dwight, I guess, because Jim's pranking is also intertwined with Pam's feelings of anxiousness and possible regret about her decision here and her feelings of guilt that's associated with seeing Jim in the office again. So we have seen from last episode that Jim being back, he is pranking again. He is happy and his relationship with Pam is going great. The two of them seem much more connected. And we have Jim embarking on quite an epic prank now that Dwight has been made manager. And it's not even like for an outcome of any malicious intent or anything. Jim's just having a good time. And because now he has accepted the position as assistant to the regional manager, he's there with Dwight doing the talking head interviews in his office. We have the whole funny sign about, you know, we've had 6 days with no nonsense. I love all of that. I love how Jim is playing the goofy yes man, but in his own way that we all know he's not completely serious. The conference room meeting is just chef's kiss. So good. Like, mm-hmm. I adore how Jim is announcing everything for Dwight. He's really playing it up.
Welcome.
He welcomes you.
Please take an agenda item.
Your agenda taking pleases him.
Have a seat, Phyllis.
You know, even Pam's in on it. She's asking what if there was a water delivery and they were delivering jugs.
Let's not get crazy and ruin our no nonsense streak. All right. So, for instance, if you're expecting a fax today, please don't yell out Michael J. Fax from Fax to the Future. Okay? That's nonsense.
Question.
Yes, beautiful girl in the front.
We are expecting a water delivery today at 10 a.m. What if, as they're delivering the water jugs, someone screams out, "Nice jugs"?
That's obviously nonsense. Nonsense. And what percentage of nonsense do we tolerate in this office?
Zero.
Jim seems happy and he's having this great time, but Athlete is still looming in the background. We still hear that there are phone calls coming through. We know now that Pam knows about the big opportunity of like this big trip and Jim is turning it down. She starts to really feel insecure about, you know, that she made Jim make this choice, that she made him stay. And later on, he's going to resent that choice and in turn resent her. And she's feeling incredibly guilty and scared about what the results of kind of, it wasn't really an ultimatum. You know, they did it for their relationship and it was really important, but she was the one that stood her ground, was like, I can't move. And so he made the choice for her. And now we're kind of seeing her, you know, the emotional fallout to that decision.
I do like that we get pretty quickly the information that everyone knows about the 3 month tour thing, that it's not a secret still that Pam finds out about it. They've talked about it clearly. And I think that's a good sign, because maybe 4 or 5 episodes ago, they wouldn't have talked about it, right? But they're kind of in this place where they're trying to get back on the same page and trying to communicate. And even though Jim seems like he's having a great time at Dunder Mifflin, like pranking Dwight and doing stuff, yeah, there's this voice in the back of Pam's head. And it kind of comes out in this conversation they have. She doesn't feel like she's enough and she doesn't want to wake up one day and be resented because of how this played out. And I think that's a really like honest conversation that they wouldn't have been able to have a few episodes ago. But now where they are, she feels like she can explain this to him, and he, you know, tries to reassure her, but she can't really shake the feeling.
Hey.
All right. What's going on?
Are you happy?
Yes, I'm happy.
I know that you're like happy and like you had fun today and that was fun, but what about a year from now?
What?
What about 5 years from now?
Bam.
Because I'm so glad you're back, baby, but I was talking to Daryl and he was talking about the trip and I just feel like you've given up so much.
This was my decision, not yours. You okay. didn't force me.
I kind of forced you to do it.
You did not force me to do this.
Yes, I did.
I don't know how else to tell you.
I'm afraid you're going to resent me and I'm afraid that this is not enough for you and I'm afraid that I'm not enough for you.
Is that really what you think?
This all comes about while Jim is making this epic prank of Dwight, and he is determined to have him pick himself as his own assistant by the end of the day. So he comes into Dwight's office in the morning with a problem of, oh, our hierarchy is all messed up. We need an assistant to the assistant.
I'm going to need you to look at your hierarchy mobile. You've got a regional manager.
The power source.
Obviously, the assistant to the regional manager.
A loyal but bungling apostle.
But what about the assistant to the regional manager?
Someone to whisper in the ear of the consigliere.
Exactly.
I'd have to get some more wire and string. But it's doable. You think any of them out there are capable?
Yeah, right. I mean, unless they're willing to pass some tests.
I like the sound of that.
So, Jim rigs it up throughout the whole episode in order to convince Dwight that only he can be the assistant that he needs.
Yes, there are a series of challenges. There's three that we see. We see know your superior, protocol, and the coffee obstacle course. And they're all three fantastic. And Jim has arranged them in such a way where basically like he's going to complete Dwight's sentence as Dwight completes Jim's sentence and kind of build the case that, oh my gosh, the most obvious answer is you.
By 2 o'clock, Dwight will choose himself to be assistant to his own assistant, me.
This is very similar to that one episode where Jim is the second manager and he is convinced by Dwight to make like an employee of the month kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Dwight rigs the system so he first picks Pam and then he picks himself. That kind of rang some bells here, but it's much more challenge-based, just like Office Olympics, than the simple point system from that other episode.
There's a great little moment in the first one, Know Your Superior, where like, hey, guess the number I'm thinking of, and then guess what song I'm thinking of, and Dwight interrupts as Pam is trying to answer. He's like, no, spouses can read each other's mind. You're trying to give your wife this job. That made me laugh.
Definite connection. Oh, something I did notice on all the shots of like the bullpen and everything, Clark is now sitting in Dwight's seat. So answer confirmed from our question last week where we were trying to figure out if Clark was, you know, banished to the annex for good, or if since Andy quit that he was going to get to move up. So yeah, Clark is back in the desk clump.
Yes. Good for Clark. I think he deserves to be there.
Oh, he totally does. He's a junior salesman. I mean, he got that White Pages account.
Yeah. They put it all on the line. The third challenge is really funny to me. It reminded me of Office Olympics a little bit, where there's like a series of boxes you have to like crawl or like climb over while carrying coffee, and Phyllis is going way too slow for Dwight to be happy with it.
I love the wheelie chair gauntlet. That's my favorite part. That's so good.
It's really good. And Dwight takes it and like runs and of course burns himself on the coffee and wins. And people are not super enthusiastic that Dwight has been named his own assistant's assistant. I think it's a lot of like kind of eye rolling, half hearted applause there.
The new assistant to the assistant to the regional manager is Dwight K. Schrute. Yes.
Thank you.
I think you might want to kneel for this. And yet, the manager for Dunder Mifflin kneels for no man.
I think at this point, everyone kind of knows what's going down. You know, they can kind of see through Jim a little bit, even though Dwight quite can't. And I love the crowning ceremony with the paper crown wrapped in tinfoil that says ARM, assistant regional manager, that he should not be kneeling to himself, that the manager does not kneel. So he has like this
kneels to no man.
He has this wide lunge that he's performing. Oh, it's such a good visual. It's a beautiful Dwight moment.
Okay, from now on, anyone who needs to speak to me has got to go through me first, all right?
And it sets up this very funny, like, series of little scenes of, like, Dwight asking Jim to do something and Jim asking Dwight to do something as his assistant, and they kind of go back and forth as, like, there's only one person I can trust. You know, it's me.
You threw the summoning bag at me, sir.
I need you to perform a test.
Perform a test?
On an innocent baby.
Ooh. I like where this is going. Unfortunately, I have a lot on my plate today, so I'm gonna have to hand this off to my number two. But don't worry, he's the best in the biz.
Damn straight.
Unless you think he can't handle it.
Hey, he can handle it.
Yeah, they really, all the bits in this episode, they don't put them down very easily. Like, they are all still up in the air. You know, we have a lot of cross references, we have a lot of like interwoven stuff, like because Philip is there, we have Dwight's reaction because of Dwight's assistantness, he's like throwing beanbags at Jim to get his attention, and
yeah.
Jim's distracted because he's trying to like reassure Pam. There's so much woven into this episode. The only outlier, I guess, before we get to the very end is Andy. Andy is off on his own at his America's Great Acapella audition.
Yeah, this show is very of its time, I guess. I mean, I think these shows are still on TV all the time, but kind of a American Idol spinoff, and it's going to be acapella singer. So he's in line.
I mean, Clay Aiken's there.
Yeah.
Talk about spit. Like, they're making it real obvious.
He's one of the judges, isn't he?
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? And welcome to America's Next Acapella Sensation.
Oh, my God. You're gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for your patience. And we hope to see you guys within the next 5 to 7 hours. Now, just to give you a couple parameters of the show, each of you will sing a song for 30 seconds, after which our judges will decide if they want you in their acapella group. Now, each group will start with 90 singers, which will compete in a series of singing and physical challenges. Oh, and look out for that pesky mole.
Ooh. There's a mole.
Oops. I'm not supposed to say that. All right. No more. Forget I said it. All right.
There's thousands of other people there, and he thinks he's just going to waltz in and get it, but he's in line with all these other people. We meet Casey D, who is very into having the camera's attention, and they're talking, and he kind of puts it together that it's also about the story, and he's just like, you know, a dude whose dad left, and he had to sell his boat. So he comes back dressed as an old man, and he's taking his lifts out. You know, this character is my actual height, unlike Andy Bernard, which is very funny. But it doesn't go the way he thinks it's going to go. It's actually kind of sad. They get to the front of the line, and they're not taking any more spots today. It's all full.
I really like, before we get into Andy's hijacked audition here, I really like how when Andy's entering this area where he's obviously being followed by a camera crew for the documentary. So he's like walking past all of this giant line that they go tell him to wait at the end of. And everyone in line is reacting to the camera. Like, I love that. It's like it's centered on Andy. He's just walking, kind of doing this confessional as he's walking. And everyone has signs and they're yelling and they're making faces and throwing peace signs and, like, you know, trying to get like that on-air camera time that everyone is trying to get when you're at like a taping of a live show, or you are in line for an audition for a reality show or anything. It's like, as soon as you see a camera, you have to perform, you know, even though you're totally not a performer, you're an everyday regular person, but everyone is on, like, as they go down the line behind Andy. I just found that really funny, and I thought it was like a really genuine, nice touch that they added that in. That's exactly how everyone would react if someone showed up being followed by a camera.
Yeah, and Andy's just used to it, right? Because it's been going on for years for him. And so he's just talking to the camera kind of in a very normal way that he always would. And yeah, that is a nice touch, especially, you know, those people are all there to become famous. It's like, oh, there's a TV crew here. Like, let's go.
So, yeah, Andy gets that devastating news of, like, right at the front of the line that, you know, they are calling off the auditions for the day. And with the help of KCD jumping on the back of a security guard, Andy runs past and busts his way into the audition and hijacks someone else's audition in order to try and get on the show in a very dramatic fashion. And it goes terribly. His choice of song, awful. Like, his Cornell makeup reveal, awful. Like, everything goes so bad, and he ends up breaking down and crying. It's a disaster.
You're still here. Ah, thank God. Clay Aiken, Santi Gold, Aaron Rodgers, you're like my three favorite people ever.
Excuse me, what is this?
Sweetheart, you're amazing, okay? You're obviously going to be on the show. So it's someone else's turn now. Yeah, go ahead. All right.
My name is Ezra Cornell, and I'm just a kindly old fellow with a song in my heart.
No, you're a middle-aged man with a lot of makeup on.
Busted.
It's really bad. I felt so bad for, like, the poor girl who was actually, like, singing for the judges, because he just barges in there, and Aaron Rodgers and Clay Aiken and all the judges are like, you can't, like, stop. You have to stop. And he just sort of collapses on the stage and is crying. We learned that he burned all of his bridges. He did unspeakable things with Carla Fern, which...
Oh, no.
Didn't need to know that, but...
Maybe he just considers the eye washing unspeakable.
Maybe. Well, he does he does mention the successful industrial safety video, so...
And I am fresh off of a hot industrial flick.
That's where we leave Andy. He is disconnected from the office, but we see his epic audition journey.
Let me try a different song, okay?
Can you do this?
Hey, hobo man. Hey, dapper Dan. You both got your style, but brother, you're never fully dressed without a smile. Your clothes may be bo-pro-key.
Look. You gotta go. You can't just sit here and cry.
Oh, I can't so just sit here and cry.
We'll meet up with him later, because since today is the airing of the documentary, everyone's going to be going to Poor Richard's to watch the documentary together. So we'll catch up with Andy at the end. But we should head back to the moment in the warehouse when Dwight is winning his own assistantship from Jim. Everyone spots Daryl walking through the warehouse, and they all confront him that he was trying to leave without telling anybody. And this traps Daryl into exactly what he didn't want to be trapped into, in that everyone wants a special moment with Daryl to say goodbye, and he hates every second of it. Everyone's making these crazy suggestions. Oscar is about to make reservations, and they're trying to convince Daryl to go with them to do all of these, like, bucket list goodbye things. And Daryl says no. He puts a stop to it, that they all need to pick one thing to do all together to say goodbye, that's the only thing that he would possibly consider doing.
Yeah, I like Daryl's sense of humor in this episode. He's like, pick one thing, but not the van, because Meredith wanted to take him to his van and listen to music together.
Okay, I made the mistake of sneaking out of here, and that's on me. But I'm not going to spend the rest of the day here doing stuff with you because you're feeling sentimental.
You have to.
Hey, I'll do one thing with y'all.
Which thing?
I don't care. Choose amongst yourselves, not the van, though.
But they choose to have basically to have a dance party. And I think this is fantastic. They're going to get some speakers and, you know, have a good time as he leaves, because he's athlete full time now.
So before the dance party happens, we find out that Jim was working on a bit of a project that he asked the crew for. He knew it was against the rules, but he asked them anyway in order to convince Pam, or, you know, to reassure her that this decision he made, it's not something he's going to regret in the future, that he is very sure of how he feels and what he wants to prioritize. And we see them drop off a envelope on his desk containing a disc that we find out later. And he is going to sit down with Pam and show her this disc that he asked the crew to put together or get a hold of. And he's interrupted by Dwight, who has just now, you know, kind of his half-assed proposal to Angela not going well. And he needs Jim to help him talk out and figure out what the heck to do next. And I really like the way this is done, because we have Pam left in the break room to with this video that, like, she was prefaced of, like, this is this thing I want to show you, this intimate moment, and Jim gets pulled away. But then what Jim gets pulled away to talk about with Dwight is, you know, he's saying that Esther is wonderful on paper. That's a paper pun.
Yeah.
But but Angela, you know, but Angela. And Jim gives him some really wonderful, genuine advice that, you know, sometimes, maybe all the time, the right choice is to follow love.
I don't know what you want me to tell you, man. All I know is that every time I've been faced with a tough decision, there's only one thing that outweighs every other concern. One thing that will make you give up on everything you thought you knew. Every instinct, every rational calculation.
Some sort of virus?
Love.
Oh.
We hear this while Pam is watching. She decides to put the disc into the computer and watch this disc. And it's a Pam and Jim love montage over some music. And we hear Jim's voiceover advice to Dwight. It's all a very emotional part of the episode. I got all weepy. I cried. I mean, how can you not? You have like a sappy song over a bunch of, like, you know, romantic memories. How could you not cry?
Hey, look, I was in college in 2004, right? Snow Patrol just hits me in the feels every time. I'm exactly the demographic for this music and this video.
Dwight, listen, no matter what happens, you gotta forget about all the other stuff. You gotta forget about logic and fear and doubt. You just gotta do everything you can to get to the one woman who's gonna make all this worth it. At the end of the day, you gotta jump. You love Angela, Dwight. I think you always have.
You're a good assistant, Jim.
Not as good as you.
That's very true.
Yeah, it's really sweet. And we see something that we have known, but Pam didn't, because we see the shot where there was the note in the teapot from the Christmas episode in season 2. And we know that he put it in his pocket. He didn't think it was the right time to share with her, whatever that card said. And we see Pam realize this and kind of like, wait, what was that? And then we learn that this was a bit of a setup for Jim to finally give her that card, that he has kept it all of these years through ups and downs and dating Karen and all of it. And he gives it to her. It's like, everything you need to know is in here. And we don't see what it says, but whatever it says, it very clearly touches her. And they embrace after this great line from Jim is like, you know, if you're not enough, like, you're everything. It is so sweet. I teared up. I came in from watching it in my office, and I told my mom, I was like, I may have cried a little bit watching The Office. I didn't expect that to be part of my day-to-day, but here we are, because it is so sweet.
You watched it?
Yeah.
Well, then I guess you're ready for this.
What's that?
It's from the teapot. Everything you'll ever need to know is in that note. Not enough for me. You are everything.
A little behind the scenes info, that note, apparently John wrote to Jenna Fischer that it was kind of like a bit of a goodbye letter about their time together on The Office, and that it really was her reading something like an emotional sentiment from him that she hadn't read before, she wasn't expecting. And so that's like a really nice touch that that letter actually did contain something really meaningful for the two actors, in addition to the implied meaning between the two characters that we've seen. So I really like that it was fairly genuine.
I mean, as good as these actors are, when you watch this episode, I think one reason it feels so real is because it did have meaning between the two of them. I think that's really cool.
I think we're seeing that too with a lot of, like, with everyone in The Office for this episode. Everyone knows that the goodbye is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that the production is heading to the end. And I think we see that. So we have that, like, this beautiful, lovely, emotional scene between Jim and Pam. We have Dwight getting super emotional about realizing that, you know, he needs to be all in with Angela and, like, tell her for real now that he loves her and that she's the one for him. And that's what Jim's advice is. And I love that, you know, we see Dwight getting all teary-eyed when they have their heart-to-heart together. Again, that, like, brotherly bond, that deep friendship between them is more apparent than ever in their discussion and their advice that they share. And then on the heels of that is when we get Daryl's dance party. And so it's like we get to break up that, like, really heavy emotional moment and emotional scenes with this ridiculous and funny dance party with everyone kind of like grinding up on each other and dancing and Phyllis going all out and Oscar with his ridiculous Vogue dance that he does every single time they need to dance. It's so great. It's really funny. I love the way they did this. And at the same time, it's like, it's not just funny and goofy. It really is showing everyone's kind of like this is like their goodbye dance. Like they're saying goodbye to each other and you do get emotion out of all the characters in this episode, even during this ridiculous disco dance that they do as a goodbye with Daryl.
Yeah, I love Daryl's kind of statement to the camera that, like, you know, I just wanted to slip out, but I'm really going to miss these folks.
I wanted to leave quietly. It seemed dignified. But having Kevin grind up on my front while Aaron pretend to hunt me from behind is more accurate tribute to my years here. I'm going to miss these guys.
I'm really glad it comes on, like, the makeup of Jim and Pam also, that, like, they kind of worked out their emotional bumps during this episode, because they're also in the room having fun dancing together. So it's a really nice closure to the episode and a lot of the people, but it's not the close of the episode, because we have one more very important scene left. And we also have to go see everyone down at Poor Richard's for the airing of the documentary. There's just so much that happens. But after the dance party, we see Angela and Oscar getting ready to, you know, have Philip go over Oscar's mother's house. So that's kind of closed up. And then we see Angela riding to the event. And suddenly Dwight's car pulls up next to her with the siren on top. He's got his police stuff out and he's yelling at her with on a bullhorn to pull over.
Classic Dwight impersonating a police officer. It's been a while since we've seen it, but he still has all that stuff in his car and he's going to put it to good use.
Pull over!
Dwight?
Move to the side of the road!
Why?
Pull over!
What is...
I love you, and I don't care that Philip's not my son. I will raise 100 children with 100 of your lovers if it means I can be with you.
Can you put that down?
This expresses how loudly I love you.
It's too loud.
I love the way they did this. I love that it seemed like it was going to be put off to maybe the next episode or at another time, but Dwight just can't possibly wait. He has, you know, the butt bullet ring in his pocket and he's ready to do this now. You know, he had that emotional moment with Jim. He felt very little with Esther when she was there during the day. You know, Philip was there in the office all day, like pulling on his heartstrings for those reasons, even though Angela denied his paternity. But he pulls Angela over and she curses him out. Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And in true Dwight fashion, he continues to yell at her on the bullhorn. And he professes his love for her. And I love that he says he would raise like 1,000 children from 1,000 of her lovers if it meant that, you know, he could be with her. And that's the key here. It's like he is choosing her. Not I'm going to rescue you. Not I'm going to give you an offer because I think you have my son. Not I feel bad for you because you don't have anything, so I want to help you out. It's for the love of her. And that's everything that Angela's been waiting to hear. And this is just such a wonderful, ridiculous Dwight moment that turns into like this beautiful finale for their affection, for them coming back together. And right there on the side of the highway, after he puts down the bullhorn, he proposes.
This is a ring taken from the buttocks of my grandmother, put there by the gangster patriarch of the Coors dynasty, melted in a foundry run by Mennonites.
Okay, yes, yes, I will. I love you.
I love you.
And I lied to you.
What?
Philip's your son.
What? Why would you say that?
I just needed you to want to marry me because you wanted to marry me.
Get out! I'm a dad!
You're a dad!
It's so sweet. It is so Dwight and Angela. I mean, this is not like Jim and Pam's proposal, right? It is very much of these characters. But yeah, you see him express this. And this is what Angela has wanted to hear. She has wanted to be chosen for her, not because of their history or their child, or like you said, out of some sort of, oh, you're in a bad spot, I can help you. But he is choosing her because he loves her. And that's what she has been dying to hear for some amount of time. And it's when the truth comes out about Philip that he is indeed Dwight's son, as Dwight has been guessing and kind of putting together through this episode. And it's great. Dwight's not mad that she lied. He doesn't question why she did it. He's so excited that he's a dad. And he just has joy on his face as this kind of washes over him. And it's perfect because it's not only the two of them finally after years being on the same page, but it's also this family of three really coming together for the first time. And I absolutely love it.
I love how everything comes together for Dwight. And I think that that's just such a wonderful ending to the show, because for so long we've seen him reach for things. Everything, you know, like reach for, you know, Angela's affection, because like she was keeping it, she wanted to like keep it secret for so long in the beginning of the series, for reaching for the management job, reaching for, you know, success on his farm. Like there's just everything he's been reaching for, respect of others, friendships, like, and he did a lot of growing this past season and a lot of letting go. And that's exactly when all of these things kind of blossomed for him. Everything that he's ever wanted has come true, has manifested, has shown up for him. And it's a really wonderful thing to see the Angela Dwight drama come to a close here, really, like that you know, everything's falling into place. And I love that we see like the simple recognition of that in the end is when they walk into Poor Richard's together holding hands.
Yeah.
And it has such a quiet dignity to it that like he doesn't try and overshadow the watching of the documentary or anyone else by like announcing anything, or it's just, it's so calm and peaceful. And I think that that's why, you know, these things happening for Dwight now happened at the right time, because he was ready to be mature about them, you know, and that's what ends here. And we also see Andy kind of coming in, makeup off, slightly humbled, mm-hmm. a little, you know, down, but we see him showing up also to Poor Richard's, voting for the documentary to be played on the TV because the bartender was refusing to switch away from sports. And so, yeah, we have this like coming together of everybody. We have Jim and Pam in a really good place. We have Angela and Dwight now engaged. We have Andy showing back up to join in the group and watch this documentary, the one thing that he actually did perform in and have success in.
Mm-hmm.
For his, you know, fame career. And yeah, we have this really wonderful closure. And we hear at the end the playing of the pilot. You know, that's, it comes full circle. That's, it's the dialogue to the pilot that we overhear in the bar, which I think is really super cool.
It's a really nice touch. I mean, it's that scene with Jim and Michael, and Mike is going to tell him how it's done because he's this master salesman.
Here we go.
All right, Jim, your quarterlies look very good. How are things going at the library?
Oh, I told you, couldn't close it, so.
So you've come to the master for guidance. Is this what you're saying, Grasshopper?
Actually, you called me in here.
All right, well, let me show you how it's done.
What I like about this episode, I like a lot about this episode, but what I really like about it, it's sort of the headline for me, is this could be the finale, and I think I'd be okay with it. Like, and I love the finale. We're going to talk about it next time. But the way this wraps up, yeah, they're still open-ended things, right? But this episode, to me, kind of stands alone. And yeah, like, I'd like to know what happens with Jim and Pam and Athlete and all these other things. But the way that it gets the four main characters at this point, right? Angela and Dwight and Jim and Pam, how we see them in this episode is so much better than where we've been most of this season, right? How many times have we ended one of our episodes saying, and Jim and Pam are in a weird spot and we'll see what happens, or, you know, Angela's crying in the car, and wrapping those up to the degree that they have in this episode, I think is really good, because I'm glad we're not going into the finale with too much on the table in terms of like emotional story to wrap up. And I think that's good.
What I also really like about this episode is that they don't, it doesn't feel like they rushed wrapping all this stuff up. Just like you said in the beginning, that it feels like more time has passed. So mm-hmm. I'm with you. I feel completely satisfied at the end of this episode.
It's a good one. It's a really good one.
Yeah. I mean, so many series tank so badly at the end. Like, they just don't know what to do. They wrap things up too quickly. They open up too many doors that they can't close. Mm-hmm. Like, even one of my favorite series, like Parks and Rec, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, they make such a mess of things. The Office does not make a mess of things. They have a nice, tidy plan. I love the way it's all done. I love even that they threw in that Plop is still being called Plop. Mm-hmm. Like, that didn't need to be in there, but it is, right? Like, we didn't even forget about those characters. Like, I adore the way it's done. I think it's so nice and clean, and it puts such a beautiful ribbon on everything. But yet, we still have one more episode to go.
I feel scared a little.
Yeah, I'm not ready for this.
No one is ready for this. You can't be ready for this. We don't even know what this is.
One thing we do know, nothing will ever be the same.
We will be back in 2 weeks to talk about the finale, the final episode of not only The Office, but also our show.
Mm.
Wow, what a ride. I'm going to be real emotional on that one, but yeah. So until then, you can go and find us over at tall_beats on Twitter, or you can find us individually at ISMH and at Tiff Arment. You can subscribe to become a member over at The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, access to our members-only bonus feed, and you can join us in the conference room, our members-only Slack, where you can make sure that you definitely get some future news for, because I don't know about you, Stephen, but I still want to do one more trivia night for the end of our show, so I guess it's not really the end, but you should definitely check that out because that would be a members-only special that you can find out about in our very special conference room. All right, Stephen. Until then, make sure you have a whole bunch of tissues ready. Let's stock up on tissues for the final episode. I don't know if I can take it.
Thankfully, I know a good paper company.
Did they pivot into tissues recently for a new revenue stream?
Never know. David Wallace is a smart businessman.
Okay, ready, everybody?
Hit it, Red.